Hello, everybody. Welcome to RPG Cast, episode 779. I'm Chris Rivers here, bringing you this week's RPG news and stuff. How are y'all?
Hey.
Doing good.
I'm joined by Ryan Costa.
Hello.
Hello.
Josh Carpenter.
Hi, hi.
And Kelly Ryan.
Hello.
Eclipse joins us on the desk today. Hello, Eclipse.
Giving you protest meeps, apparently.
Yeah, protest meeps, because I made noise. And she's like, if you're going to make noise, pet me. Otherwise, stop making noise.
I'm busy sleeping here.
Cat's protest meows are always so cute. Alice's is like, meh.
Like a smoker?
That's more like Twinkies. Yeah. She goes for rapid meow barks. Oh, will you stop it? Not talking to you, cat. All right. Anyway, hi. What do we talk? Games.
Games.
Did anyone play games?
I spent $25 on a cat.
You spent what?
I spent $25 on a cat.
On a cat?
Yeah.
Did you adopt an eighth cat?
No.
Oh.
First off, I only have six.
For now.
My joke is seven is a lucky number, and Vaughn just gives me the death glare. But no, in Final Fantasy XIV, they released a very adorable cat mount that actually looks like a real cat and not like a potato, like the fatter cat. And I bought it, and yeah, it is adorable because it has little emotes that do the cat stretch and the cat wash its face, and then the little hissing motion, and your character kind of pats it like, it's okay, baby.
It's just a giant Maine Coon, it looks like.
Yeah.
With a bow.
A bow, yes. But yeah, it's just a giant, it's a scaled up cat model that your character rides on, and it acts like a normal cat. It's weird.
And it flies.
It flies?
Yeah.
Oh, they have different sizes for the different...
You got it.
The different characters. Oh, yeah, there's flying, yeah.
Discover a new you. Wander fluffier than a cart. How is it a new you? Compels all who witness to exclaim, ooh, big stretch. Wins hearts and wash coats with this adorable self-care routine.
Yeah, I hadn't read any of the flavor text.
The shag cat's assuredly terrifying and not at all cute response to major threats and minor inconveniences. Foreboding fluffery.
Does it just do that in general when you're trying to ride?
No, you can.
No, you can press a button and it'll do the little emotes.
This isn't World of Warcraft. The World of Warcraft has a mount like this too, so it's like,
yeah, but like it has the exact same animations, but they're just idle animations. You can't actually get them to do it.
I think you need the Mega Shiba Inu.
Maybe. I mean, I like Shiba Inus. I think they're cute, but I don't know. Maybe on a sale.
Maybe on a sale.
Because, this new cat is my permabout now.
Mm-hmm.
They
want $24 for this cat.
Yep.
And you cannot gift it to people for some reason.
I was having a conniption fit when I bought it, actually, because I guess their server was being hammered by having to distribute these things. And I bought it, and I run over to the PS5 and log in, and it's like, where's my cat? I'm refreshing the mailbox. I don't see my cat. Where's my cat, Square? And then realizing that I may have a problem.
You should also get the Papa Pisa mount, because your character just glomps on the side of it while it flies around.
Oh,
it's pretty amazing.
I do have
my favorite one.
I too do have two variants of the fat chocobo, which animations also crack me up. Particularly when you're grounded and you do the jump, and the poor thing just tries to get to the carrot on a stick and just can't.
I wonder how much the if you bought all the cosmetics in Final Fantasy XIV, it would come out to now.
Probably quite a bit.
Yeah, probably a disturbing amount that should be like talked about on drama videos.
Because the last time I spent any money on cosmetics was when there was a sale, and I did buy the fatter cat and the Fenrir Final Fantasy VII mount.
Mm.
I like how out of all of this, the first time my immersion was broken wasn't with the flying cat, but it was by thinking that the mages that can be knocked over with a stiff breeze are able to attach to an owl for hours at a time. It's like while they're flying, it's just like the amount of upper body strength you need to just keep grabbing onto a bird.
What would you prefer, the one hand that holds you like a kitten as you fly around?
Hmm.
Which is kind of comedic. It's like this is so, just feels so degrading. I am a warrior of light, and you're picking me up like I'm a weak little kitten.
I could try using you as an attack maneuver like that. You just take your sword out and keep waving it.
But the fatter cat has the new Maine Coon has like one of the most satisfying run animations I've ever seen. It feels so cat having the zoomies kind of feel to it.
That frantic back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love it. I also experienced my first Final Fantasy XIV in-game concert. I was running around, I'm blanking on the city name. I was running around one of the major hub cities, because I was playing on an alt that I had started fresh. And I'm in my map trying to figure out where I need to go for a quest, and I'm like, do I hear Aerosmith? And I go to the source of the sound, and like, these people are playing Aerosmith.
How dare they?
Dream on. And I sit there and I listen, and then they go from that to Linkin Park to Barbie Girl.
That's an assortment.
Yeah. And you know, I'm on PS5, so every one of these full songs, I'm hitting the record recent gameplay button and uploading them, showing them to Vaughn. And then they whip out the big one, guys. They played Through the Fire and the Flames.
Oh, they went Dragon Force. All right.
And I lost my mind.
It was like
10-15 year old memes, always there to get you.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh my god, okay, this is awesome. And they also like did Star Wars medleys and video game medleys and stuff. And I'm like, how, Chris, you've played longer. How do they do that?
The bard instrument things that they added to the game, like, let you just play notes. And so people have scripts and stuff.
Okay.
And some people probably play it for real and it's scary. But yeah, there's a mod that helps you play those songs reliably and just put them on loop and stuff.
Okay, because I had a feeling that it was being done with the script. I don't know how difficult those instruments are, even though I had played a bard. But
well, no, you don't have to do that if you play a bard. It's just like they added cosmetic-y play around in town music instruments at some point, and so
okay.
So you press a button on your keyboard to make notes. So you could do that. And some people probably are, and they're just good. have to be a bard, says Tam. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sitting here listening to this, and I'm just sitting there wondering, does ASCAP have people in Final Fantasy XIV looking for concerts?
Probably.
Make you pay the royalties?
Yeah, because I did upload these to my YouTube channel, though I only named the Dragon Force one because I'm uploading from my PS5 and...
You don't want copyright strikes either.
Yeah. they sound kind of jank, so I don't know if
the automated stuff will pick it up necessarily. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen in an MMO.
It is dedication.
And, yeah. And I have a feeling that it's like one dude that's multi-boxing. But yeah, that's Final Fantasy 14 is mostly what I've played this week. I'm still kind of going through Shadowbringers content. I think I'm level 77 right now on my machinist. And yeah, the only other thing I've played is more Dragon Quest Monsters, and that's just Pokemon but Dragon Quest.
Have you found your favorite yet?
No, not really, because with Dragon Quest Monsters, you're constantly combining them and swapping them out because they have grades. And you need to have the appropriate grade to do the appropriate tournament. So you don't never really stick with the same monsters. You just like combine, like, okay, these guys have good stats. And that's pretty much it. I do have this one angel slime, however, that I don't know what I did, but it's got some pretty high level spells that one shot a lot of things. And I'm definitely keeping that one around. So yeah, I guess to answer your question, I do have a favorite now. My angel slime that wrecks things.
May it be usable for a long period of time based off of what you were saying.
Yeah, and when you combine monsters in this game, you get you have the ability to like transfer whatever skill trees that you've learned already. So if I ever do find something suitable to kind of combine that one with, I can still keep the skill tree that has these nuke spells, which is kind of nice.
That also sounds pretty similar to Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth, which I know we had talked about both wanting to play more of. So if you like that style of combining skill trees and stuff, it's used in Digimon too.
Yeah, I've wanted to play the Cyber Sleuth / Hacker's Memory duology. I picked it up on Switch for pretty cheap a while back. I just haven't had time to play it. Mm-hmm. I do have this next week off, so I'm going to get a little bit of gaming in, but I've also got an art project that I'm working on because I'm trying to enter a mini painting contest. Or I can win a tabletop game that I had already pre-ordered, but if I win the game, that I could just cancel the pre-order.
Okay, so it's a mini painting contest, not just a small painting contest.
Yeah, sorry, I should have
clarified. It goes both ways. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Miniature.
Miniature. Yeah.
As in, they gave you a pattern, a 3D. Printing pattern and was like, paint this many, take or print this many, paint it, take a photo, you could win our game. And funnily enough, the mini is a cat, so I'm like, well, I'm just
sold.
Because the funny thing about entering contests, and I've always said this, is that no matter what happens, someone always has more time and money than you.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured I might as well just give it a shot. Somebody's going to put this thing together with like an elaborate diorama with like a resin lake and all the hard stuff. And I'm like, I'm just kind of gluing static grass to a coaster and hoping that it looks good.
So long as you're having fun.
Yeah, no, it's fun. And I like contests like this where I can kind of extend my creativity to a certain degree. So I think it'll be an interesting challenge for me. I got the base kind of put together last night, and I was waiting for it to dry so that I can do some of the finishing touches, and then the last part will just be painting the mini itself. So that's going to be my week this week.
Chaos asks, do you enjoy people judging your creativity?
Yeah, sometimes. I don't know. It feels like a trick question.
I know, right? Like, how are we supposed to answer that?
I'm a reviewer for a website. That's all that I get.
Not many people caught chiming in to say good job, huh?
No, actually.
I thought that was directed to Kelly.
It was.
No, because I don't really write a whole lot for the site. Because my day job is writing, so Paul was just like, yeah, I understand why you just want to do podcasting. So, but Dalandar, you had a review recently that kind of piqued my interest.
Yeah, I finished it up this past week. It was for Monogatari, Fia, and Wondrous Academy. So it's kind of the opposite of a game that we talked about on here called Silent Hope, in that Silent Hope was really fun gameplay, but it had very frustrating story. This has a very funny story. Honestly, I can't think of off the top of my head another game I've beaten that was consistently humorous like Mana Monogatari was. But the gameplay itself, the joke I thought of as I was playing it is it played like Dragalia Lost if you had it at home. And to play like a bargain, very quick Nintendo gacha game isn't the worst thing, but fights are usually over in like less than a minute, and you have the same radius for attacks, which are just outside of, like, it's not directly in front of you. It's a little bit ahead and in a circle. So if enemies are moving too much, you'll miss. And then, oh, my one attack missed, and now my party wiped out everyone else. So it ended up being a little frustrating to try clearing each of the floors. This game's an action dungeon crawler. So it's not really a game that you want to go into each room while you're walking around and take out every enemy, because eventually you'll just get a little sick of it, and it's very easy to level up. So you'll stop having any, like, bosses will die in one hit, two kind of situation. But it was interesting dodging and moving around. There's a lot of traps that, as you go get further into the game. So, like, platforming inside a dungeon crawler, like the Shiren the Wanderer type, was a little interesting to see, at least for myself. And still always fun collecting stuff by destroying destructibles. And every couple of floors, you have a new story scene where even basic enemies have at least one joke, chuckle-worthy line that comes up. So it's just a lot of fun seeing how they built upon their jokes layer upon layer. I'd term the humor probably closest to something like a SpongeBob SquarePants, where it's geared towards younger audiences, but adults can pick up on, like, oh, this was made for me type jokes.
Mm-hmm. And it's not pervy humor like the Neptunia games?
Not overly. There's a couple of spots that you can take it that direction, but the game doesn't take it that direction.
Okay. That's kind of good to know, because I get tired of that sometimes.
It was very surprising to me, outside of one very particular character design, that, like, even characters that are well endowed in the chest do not show cleavage. So, like, they don't really have that aspect of it. There might be a few jokes where you could, like, again, if you take it that way, but it's not like someone saying, stop looking at me like that, and hides behind. Like, they're not doing jokes like that.
Mm-hmm. So is the combat action or turn-based? Or
it's action.
It's action combat? Okay.
Yeah, so you start off on one side of the map, the enemy's on the other. If you slash at them before you get, like, into the combat, you already have your action turn bar fully completed, so you'd be able to use a magic art, it's called, right away. Otherwise, you're basically running around, and every time you do a regular attack, like if you have a spear equipped, you poke, it makes your bar for the spells go slower, but you can still do a little bit of damage. And typically what happens is you have two party members with you that you can't control. They use their strongest spell, kills Like if you're facing four enemies, they'll kill three out of the four, and the fourth one's kind of hurt. You just sit there poking at it until it dies.
It's just kind of unusual. I always think of Sting. I know this is like a Sting collaboration, and I think of them as strategy RPGs.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of feels more like the Compile Heart side than Sting overall, from what I know, because there isn't a whole lot of creativity in the combat. That's something that you can almost guarantee from Sting, is that there's something creative in it.
Yeah.
On the rare times, fights do last a bit longer. When you use a water attack, you'll gain a water elemental orb, which you collect enough of matching ones. You can use almost like a limit break, and it attacks everyone on the screen, does a little flashy attack. But a lot of the attacks honestly look very similar. It's very like the water attack and fire attack just have different colors almost, but do the same kind of mini explosion looking thing. So it's not a whole lot there gameplay wise, which going back isn't something you'd expect normally from Sting, but is something you kind of expect from Cabal Heart, to be honest.
Yeah. In fairness, with when we talk about those developers, you know, we're like, oh, I think of Sting as being this. And I mean, like the Sting games that I liked on the GBA and PSP now are like 15 years old. So who knows how many of those people are even still there anymore?
Yeah. Funnily enough, I did pick up the Yggdre Union Switch game this week for like $15, or it was like 60% off. And at some point I want to get around to playing that, because that was the one Sting game that I never got around to playing on the GBA. My favorite one on of all time was actually Knights in the Nightmare. And I don't know if you guys ever played that one.
I did not play that one, but yeah.
Very briefly. It's one I've been meaning to go back to.
That was Sting at its peak weird, but it was so good. Oh, and Gungnir.
Gungnir, the one game that I bought three times without realizing until I organized my stuff and went, wait, why do I have three copies of this?
You could sell two of those copies for a pretty penny these days.
Ah. Noted.
And Gungnir is one of the ones that I wish... Gungnir is one of the ones that I wish that they would re-release, because it was so unique and just such a ticks all my boxes kind of strategy RPG.
I think Kelly just keeps saying it so that I say it.
Yeah.
Gungnir.
But I did wishlist this game, Dalendar. I was hovering over the buy button. And I was like, do I want to play it?
I saw after everything had, like, I wrote it all up and I took a look after I saw the price tag on it. And it's one of those ones where I'd easily recommend at a half off rather than, because it came out almost full price. And it is a decently long game. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be like 50 hours, but it has a little bit of both jank and the type of the humor that they use, because everyone kind of has almost a tagline. So if you find any particular person's like, oh, that's actually not that funny, they're going to keep doing it the entire game situation. But it still builds upon it in layers, and like a joke you thought was simple in, say, chapter one and chapter three has a payoff you didn't see coming. So that's still worthwhile, even if you're rolling your eyes at some of the lines and some of the characters. They all have moments. So
can we refresh people on the name of this game again?
Moto Matagare. Sorry.
Apparently, no, we can't. All right.
Fia and the Wondrous Academy. Let's call
it Fia and the Wondrous Academy. Okay.
That will bring it up.
It sounds like a farming game.
Yeah. No, it's Monogatari means story.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's
and Mado's magic.
And it is $50 right now, which is why I would probably wait for it to go on sale.
This looks like, wait a second. Now I'm, oh, this is the one with the Puyo Puyos. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was about to say legally distinct, but Puyo Puyos are so generic.
No, like, no, they're from the series.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. You're right. This is the one where it's like technically a spinoff or whatever.
No, the Puyo Puyos are a spinoff of it, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Madamata Daughter is the first franchise, I think, from Compileheart, if I remember reading right.
So is this a remake of an old one, or how does this work? Or
is this is the newest one. It's not a remake of anything. It's
so just, we just get it this
most
time.
Most of the other ones didn't come in, so there's a very slim chance that they're references to maybe other Madamata.
Yeah, but it didn't bug you that much, right? Yeah.
It was never noticeable.
Weren't the first ones on the Genesis?
I know Puyo was. I don't know about this.
I know one of them was on Super Famicom because Scar played it on his wheel.
It's got animes too, but let's see. Mado Monogatari, known in the American release version as Sorcery Saga. So we've gotten them before. A series of first-person dungeon crawler video games by Compile. See, before they were Compile Heart, they were Compile, and they also made good shooters. But anyway, let's keep moving on. Let's see. First one was 1990 for the MSX2.
Oh, good lord.
Which is a Microsoft computer thing, I think, right?
Yeah.
No.
That was where the original Metal Gears.
No, the Sony MSX. Excuse me, not Microsoft. This was Sony. But it ran MSX-DOS or MSX Basic. No, we're going to... No, this is not... Go to LGR if you want to learn about the MSX, I bet. We're going to go here and see where was the first the MSX, then release years by system. I love this. 1990 on the MSX, 1991 on the PC-9801, 2025 on the Nintendo Switch. So apparently in Japan right now, so this is not the one you got, not the one you're talking about. They just got a remake of the first game on the Switch. And then what did
we get?
Well,
maybe if this one does good, they'll...
we got the newest game. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Moreover.
But developed by Sting and published by Compileheart, which is, man, that's weird. Yeah. And then published in the West by Idea Factory, which is like, man, don't have Idea Factory publish things if you want me to think they might be good.
They're just publishing. Uh-huh. Idea Factory and Compileheart have always been kind of hand in hand.
I know. Let's look at the most recent things released by... Wait. This list only goes up to 2017. Darn you, Wikipedia! It's not up to date, so I don't know the most recent things they published, because whoever was maintaining the article gave up 8 years ago. Never mind.
Sorcery Saga: Curse of the Great Curry God. Series.
Is that part of the series? Okay,
that's a Madamata.
That's what it says. Yeah.
Did it have Puyo Puyos?
No.
Yeah.
Which is what I find weird.
So they decided to just keep them out of all the games, I guess.
And they're only in some. Sorcery Saga was more of a roguelike.
Yeah.
Like mystery dungeon type game.
Yeah. This plays like a mystery dungeon. It's not on a grid, though. You can move around on the dungeon map.
So it's not first-person like dungeon crawl either?
No.
Oh.
It's the mystery dungeon slash Sheeran the Wanderer type, except it's not on a grid while you're moving around. So that allows you to interact with the traps a little bit differently.
So how do you gate your movement per turn, then?
You have it's vitality, but they call it vitals in this, where everything you do takes a little chunk off, and you eat curry to replenish it, or when you run out, it turns to taking your max HP away.
So sorry, what I meant was like in a mystery dungeon, like you move and then the enemies move. Like, how is that handled here?
It's fully action. Oh. So if the enemy sees you, it keeps chasing after you.
Oh, okay, so it's not, there's no there. Like just stand there and they can't move. It's like,
yeah,
it's happening. If you stand now, there, get moving.
There's some enemies, especially one really annoying one that steals your MP that will see you through walls and stuff. So even as soon as you get to a new floor, you're like, okay, I'm on a new floor. Nothing's here. I'm going to go to the washroom. You'll come back and your MP's gone because and he saw you and walks over and steals it.
Oh. Yeah, hopefully this will be on sale at some point between now and like Christmas or something.
Yeah. There's also some fun forms of mini games. I didn't really interact too much with the you can grow vegetables to help make curry yourself, so you don't have to keep buying, which is a little tough to buy curry, which is your item that allows you to stay in dungeons longer. So as dungeons get deeper and deeper, you need to, even just running away from enemies, not doing anything except going down a floor, will take a bit of your vitality away. So you kind of need to have at least two, I would say, curry to make it through most dungeons towards the end. But you can make your own by planting seeds and growing fruit. You can fish. Fishing is one of the easiest ways to get currency if you needed to buy anything. So it's not deep by any means, but it's still fun.
Sounds fun. Yeah. I seem to be the only person that seems any sort of interested in playing it, though.
This is by no means. I tend to talk about games personally more on the optimistic and positive side. I gave it a 3 out of 5. If you're interested in it, it's something that will probably, it'll tickle your funny bone and you'll enjoy it a bit. But if you're not already interested in Mystery Dungeon likes, this isn't the best one to jump into.
As soon as you said Silent Hope, I was in.
Yeah. It's as bad as the story got for Silent Hope is as bad as the combat is from Automata Gautry. Mm-hmm. I think I had messaged you at one point saying that if they combined Silent Hope's gameplay with Automata Gautry's story, we would have a 5 out of 5.
Huh. That's fascinating. I wonder if that could be our question of the week this week. Can you tolerate a game that does one thing really bad if it does another thing really well? Because I've played a lot of games like that. Like for me, which in the 100 Night was kind of like that for me, that the combat was terrible, but I enjoyed the story.
I'm trying to think if I can come up with an example outside of reviewing, because for a review, I feel more stubborn to want to complete a game. So mm-hmm. if it's something I picked up on my own and like, oh, I play this, it's finally over. But I like had so much fun with the blank. I just can't think of off the top of my head right now.
I think that's why I had ended up finishing actually rolling credits on Star Ocean 4. Was because even though I thought the story sucked, I was having so much fun in the combat system that I kind of put up with its god-awful story.
Really terrible story.
Yeah. I don't know. Doesn't... We can put a pin in that for our question of the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. What else have you played?
That was about it for the actual full games, and since the 7 demos I played for the cast here this week, I can just bring up during the news part, because all of them are news articles too.
Perfect. I love it.
So Josh, it looks like you rolled credits on Sakura Wars.
I did. Now that game, I love Sakura Wars too. I don't know if that's any surprise, but that was so much fun. So such a totally different experience just being drenched in like 90s anime instead of current anime, all those tropes. It mm-hmm. was just like a fun blast from the past. Like I mentioned that last week, I just wish there was like an easier way for more people to play that game, because mm-hmm. you definitely have to jump through some hoops. But once I got away from the Mac and went back to PC emulation, I thankfully didn't really have any problems with it. But the game is so goofy, so filled with, you know, ridiculous hijinks, And it's paced really well, you know, and just like it's snappy. It moves along. The whole game is like done in like 30 hours. So, you know, like you move it along. It's a very satisfying experience to have, and it does not overstay its welcome. And of course, I finished that. And then, speaking of games that overstay their welcome, jump back into Trails into Daybreak 2.
Always a Trails game.
Always a Trails game. Like, I loved the first Trails into Daybreak. That was such a, you know, like a fun new setting. Finally moving to Calvard, you know, new cast that's a lot of fun. And this game just goes nowhere. I had heard that complaint going into it, and that has also been my experience. You are just trudging along. You're doing the same sort of small little quests that you always do in a Trails Tank game, but nothing is really tied into how it's not readily apparent how all of this is actually moving the overall arcing story forward. So like in the first game, the whole point was you were trying to, you know, like collect all the different Genesis, all the orb mints that the character's grandfather had made. And, you know, like there was like one left at the end of the last game. And then this entire game is like that last one. You're still trying to collect it, but now it's been broken up into pieces. And now you're collecting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's the Triforce.
Exactly. And it's just like I was looking at the clock last night. I put in like 20 plus hours this week, and I'm just still in it's all been in the interlude between Act 2 and Act 3. And it's just the gameplay mechanic that they've added into this one of you basically one of the Genesis now gives you the ability to basically like survive death and then go back and like swap timelines. but they have, you know, like I'm three quarters of the way through the game. They really haven't done anything with it. You just go, you hit a dead end, you die, and then you jump back. And then it's like, okay, well, we're not going to do exactly that. Let's do something slightly different. But it doesn't, it neither, there's nothing in it where you're doing something in that other timeline to kind of like where they affect one another, nor is it really advancing the plot. It just kind of feels like, oh, I go, I hit a brick wall, and then I do something slightly different over again. Even going up to sometimes like fighting the same boss battle like two or three times. There were a couple of different times where you just like, oh, I go, I fight this boss, I die. I go, then I come back, I do something slightly different, still fight that boss again, still die. And then you go and you do a third thing. And there's no way to like sidestep that even. It's like, no, 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 you must do this three different, like a, you know.
It sounds like you're in the montage section of Edge of Tomorrow still.
I wish it was in a montage. you're playing it through.
The way I've been thinking of it is like that Family Guy joke with the publisher talking to Stephen King. He goes, there's a lamp monster. Ah, wow. Like, okay, runs it on my desk.
It's, you know, like I think I'm finally getting to where, you know, like they're kind of tying kind of letting you in on what's been going on all game. I'm just not finding it to be terribly satisfying. I am finally to the point in the game where I'm kind of getting all the little hints that were all the stuff that ties into Trails Third. I don't even know if you remember, Kelly, but I think in some of the lead up, we mentioned that you get to go to paradise.
Oh so,
yeah. I'm in paradise now.
Oh, spoiler alert, paradise is not paradise.
No.
Something called paradise in an anime game is not paradise? I'm confused.
There is not accuracy in naming here.
Well, I feel like people really need to know that going in because it can be triggering.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you played Trails Third, you've seen
not
things.
Not yet. That's my next one to play.
That's your next
well,
one?
Well, you're going to enjoy it.
I love Trails Third. It's a. I think this is one that very much feels like a bridge game, where they are just, you know, like bridging where they wanted to go in Calvard to where they want to go next. And it's just not as executed as well as like Trails Third. Trails Third was very much a game that they kind of put together because they didn't have all the pieces in place that they wanted for going forward in Calvard. But that, even in that game, you can, I mean, you remember, Kelly, like that's a game where they were obviously like reusing even assets, you know, it was, you were going through the doors and then you were kind of like, oh, hey, here's this area from Labral that you've been to before. But I don't know, it worked in that game. And this one, it just kind of feels like more like filler.
Yeah.
We'll see. That I'm sure there'll be a moment, just because as much as I am the person who says Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2 needed more dialogue, that I'll hit a wall somewhere, and I'm curious to see where. Other than between, like, I get burnout between each game. Like, yeah. I beat one, I started trying to play two immediately, because I'm like, oh, this had an amazing story. I want to see where it continues. And then 5 hours into Trails of Cold Steel 2, I went, I know this is amazing. I can't right now. I put it down, and I went back like a year later, and then beat that, started 3, made it about 2 hours into 3, and went, yeah, I can't right now. Stop. When I played 2 and started 3 was just before I got hired on to RP Gamer. And since I've been here, I've played 3 games, I think, that weren't for coverage. So I'll get to it.
You know, you could if you want. You don't have to just
play. Yeah, I the addiction to writing is real.
Oh, okay.
So playing a 130-hour game means like a month and a half of not writing, and I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, it's an investment. Yeah, I would not suggest playing Trails games back to back. I think Alex was pointing out to me that like this one had kind of like the shortest development cycle of any kind of like recent Trails game, and it definitely feels that way. Like you're going to this resort island, and they'll do like you did in Mishladum, you know, they give you a bunch of free time to kind of go and do things with your companions. And you get to this resort island, and the only things you could do is you could drive around with one of your characters, or you could go parasailing, and that was it. But they gave you like 10 times, so it's like I'm redoing this driving scene over and over and over again, or I'm redoing the parasailing over and over and over again. I'm like, oh god, this is not fun.
Budget Hot Springs episode The Game doesn't sound the best.
Oh man.
And yet Hot Springs episodes are always my favorite because they crack me up so bad.
I'm getting close. I just got to finish it. I got to push through, get through this. So I'm ready, because I mean the next one's coming up in January.
I got to get
They never
up.
Stop.
I know. I think they've been like 60% done for, you know, like about 5 games. I think Kondo just keeps coming back. I'm like, oh yeah, we're like 2/3 of the way through the overall arc. I'm like, hadn't you been saying that for years now? They just keep making them.
They're splitting the writers are splitting their time between crying and talking to the writer of One Piece and World of Warcraft and going, how do you keep doing this?
You hire Chris Metzen back.
That's something to look into. Is there someone in the Trails franchise that wrote for it that left partway through?
But by the
no,
end
they
of
they don't
this,
need more writing. They need less writing. What are you talking about?
Well, focused writing from the sounds of it, because at least if it was enjoyable and moved the plot, this wouldn't be so bad, is what I'm getting. All right.
Yeah, that's my frustration with this particular entry. Maybe the ending will pull it out, but it's felt a little fillerish. Which, when you're at like 60, 70 hours, is a bit much for fillerish.
I'd agree. I thinking of I don't I'm not overly familiar with the franchise from Falcom, but like when I played Ys 10, one of the complaints that I thought I'd run into a bit more was that it was, oh, remember when we talked about this ship trip from between 3 and 4? Well, here's a game about it.
Yeah.
And I thought it would feel way too filler, but at least with Ys 10, they made it a grand expanding story that was a lot of fun with characters you didn't really see again, which is a way they could have done it with, from what it sounds like, Trails into Daybreak. But it feels like you already know all the characters, but they couldn't do anything with those characters, so it's just spinning its wheels.
Yeah. I mean, Ys is a very, oh man, you get fans of Ys that absolutely loathe the modern entries because they liked the original games that were just like, there was very minimal story. You just go, it's all action combat for like 15, 20 hours and you're done. There are real debates about Ys, especially because it has changed so much from the old days to the modern ones. The modern ones are kind of slowly becoming more, you know, Trails-ified.
Sometimes to its detriment.
Yes.
I became a fan of Ys because of 10, so I'll play the earlier ones and we'll see when I get to this is so action based, it's amazing. Like, is it though, or am I just going to die a lot and complain?
I'm curious how you are going to feel about 9 when you get to it. Because that game just had the perfect pacing and combat and everything about it. And it was kind of unfair to compare 10 to it, but 10 really did feel like a step back.
Different people have different likes about that. Like, there are some people who really love like 8, you know, who love Lacrimosa of Dana, and that's their favorite. I just adored Monstrum Nox and what they did with that. Mm-hmm. The way they, you know, built that city and the traversal was just so much fun. You know, like Dalinar loved 10. So
I also come from the Trails background where I wanted more from that for dialogue and stuff. So having a game that was, and I liked all the characters in 10, that made it easy to like. But in retrospect, even though I enjoyed the combat, it did play out a bit more almost like it was cinematic but easy, which I don't think is something that normally comes up with Ys games. So playing an earlier one where it's less cinematic but more difficult would be a change, and it would be interesting. Like 8 and 9 kind of seem like they might be in the in-between, where it's like, this is the perfect, it was difficult enough but also had enough story. So I'll definitely have to check them out and see where they compare in my mind.
Yeah, the Ys games have never been like punishingly difficult. I've always felt like they have a pretty good balance of, you know, a good amount of challenge without having to bang your head against the wall. I mean, and they've always been games that have had difficulty sliders, and you know, if you want it to be brutally difficult, you can turn up the difficulty and and have it to just be, you know, as challenging as you want. But like the earlier games have more of like some of the early games almost have like shmup like battles in it. Like, you'll have these bosses that will just like fill the screen with all kinds of things that you have to like run and dodge and kind of run up there and get a couple slashes in, and then like, oh crap, another big attack. Now I got to run everywhere, try and avoid all the stuff that's flying at me. There's a lot more of that in the earlier ones than there is now.
That freaking bat boss.
Oh
yeah.
And you got that rocking soundtrack, of course, going in the background. Mm-hmm. It just like kicks up and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm getting ready. I'm ready to go. Let's go.
Ys has especially old Ys has some of the best soundtracks.
I like 10's.
Oh, 10's had a good soundtrack, too.
OK.
That's kind of what Ys is known for, aside from the bump combat of the older games.
I mean, Falcom's always been big on, you know, like for a small studio, they always have full-time, you know, a significant full-time staff that does their their music, you know, Sound Team JDK.
I forgot, was Yuzo Koshiro part of that?
Oh, crap, I think so. Wasn't he at some point?
Yeah, because that explains a lot of the good music. Koshiro has been kind of top of mind because he's got a new shoot 'em up out on Steam, and I guess people have been pirating it, and he kind of came out and said, hey, please don't pirate my game.
Yes, he was there very early on, did Ease 1 and 2.
Okay, yeah.
80s.
What's his new game?
Oh, gosh. Hang on, let me check my Steam wish list, because it was a weird day, but I'm blanking on it. Actually, hang on. It is Earthion.
Okay.
Side-scrolling space shooter developed natively for 16-bit systems.
In 2025?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Lord. So one of those where they're truly developing it for, you know, like a Genesis or whatever?
Yeah, because I think the Steam version just kind of runs on a Genesis emulator, and I think they're trying to get a physical Genesis release out.
Oh, here it is. Oh, look at that. That looks neat. Side-scrolling. All right.
But Yuzo Koshiro makes some of the best video game music I've ever heard. Not as good as Nobuo Uematsu. Let me clarify that. Because he's my favorite video game composer of all time, but Yuzo Koshiro is number two for me. Like every good Genesis soundtrack.
Yeah, Etrian Odyssey. Lord,
I normally don't follow, like, Uematsu, of course, is a name I've known for many years, and I normally don't follow composers. But the next game Morgan Testard works on, yeah, I'm buying simply to see how it fits in with this gameplay. It's the Clair Expedition composer.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, that was a good soundtrack, too. My only complaint is that I think that they just put the Clair Obscur soundtrack away on vinyl currently.
Yeah, that's weird.
And I don't have a record player, so...
We know your hatred of the records.
I mean, I understand to a degree. I just don't get it. I think CDs are so much more convenient and cheaper.
We've moved on from those too, Kelly.
I know.
Okay. I think the fun one is people who want to go back to cassette tapes. It's like, nope, no, those were never
no,
good.
Oh, God. No.
Nope.
Those were terrible. Was that terrible technology? No.
Especially if you only had a cassette player that only fast forwarded.
Oh no. Oh, you got the cheap budget cassette player. No one wants that one.
So it's like, oh, I'm out walking the dog. I want to hear the song again, but I have to flip the tape, fast forward, flip the tape. I'm not there yet.
Oh, you went too far.
Yeah.
Back in my day, you just put on the music, hit play, and liked it.
I remember walking the dog and carrying around my record player the way it was meant to be played.
Yeah. Wait.
Yeah, when I eventually got a CD player, I have to admit that wasn't much better.
No, not till they got good anti-skip, which took a while, yeah. And they were still bulky, and it's like, and then you looked at the people with the mini disc, you're like, oh, that looks better, but this has cost too much, so I'm going to stick with my CDs, and then iPods came out, and like, those are really expensive, and then it got cheap, and now it doesn't matter anymore, because it's all on your phone.
There was a thing called digital audio tape that was more for, like, radio stations and stuff, mm-hmm. And the RIAA tried pretty much, like, put the kibosh on that being commercially available because piracy.
You'd make good copies off of it.
Yeah.
You can't have that.
And then MP3s happened, and it happened anyway, so, yeah.
All right, who's next,
Chris?
What have I been playing? I've been playing, and I blame Kelly for this, I've been playing Final Fantasy XI again. I just seem to be cursed to replacing one addictive game with another, don't I?
Hey, to be fair, I just provided the heroin
Okay.
Scar is what gave you the needle. No, I provided the needle. Scar is what gave you the heroin. Because,
did he?
He gave you a bunch of money. Because
he gave me a bunch of money? Like, yeah. I wasn't going to play if I didn't have the money?
I mean, it helps.
It does, but, like, no. I honestly, it's been middling of an experience. I don't know why, but either it's this version of the game or the add-ons that they include with it. It doesn't perform well on my system, and it's been bugging the hell out of me.
Really?
Yeah, and it should just, like, run a bazillion. The problem is the game is single-threaded in some ways still.
So you get
too much going on one thread, and it doesn't matter. Like, you try to scale up to modern frame rate standards and stuff, and it can't do it.
Yeah.
I don't know what... But regardless of that, like, I had to turn off some plugins, and that's fair, and I did that. And the... game's old. Let me try again. I'm playing on the private server Cat's Eye because apparently what we do nowadays, instead of playing new MMOs that have new ones come out, we pirate old ones. Yay, isn't that delightful? So I'm playing on the private server Cat's Eye, what Kelly and Scar play on, and I was lured here with the promise of fast XP rates, and we're going to have fun playing an old game together in a different way because they've changed some things, and it'll be fun. And when I got here, I feel immediately the pressure to catch up so I can get to the same level as other people and do what they're doing. And it's like, well, that's fine because everything's accelerated. But not everything's accelerated. Oh, my God. The quest and mission structure. And this game is still old. And, there are things I've done in Final Fantasy XI because, you know, I played that game too long. I played it far too long. You heard about it in this podcast for far too long. You don't want to hear about it anymore. So you're not going to hear about it much longer. But I did so many things on my character in Final Fantasy XI with the idea of this sucks, but I'm never going to have to do it again, and I'm going to feel good about having it done. So here I am on a new server with a new character. None of that stuff's done, and I hate it. I hate that none of the stuff's done, because I hate doing the stuff, because most of the stuff they have you do in that game is not good design nowadays, and bleh. And instead of having the wonder and fun of the world being new and exploring it, this is a world I know very well, and that wonder's gone, and I just want my old character and to not worry about doing all this stuff and to do something interesting, and I don't have that, and I should just go back play retail, but I shouldn't, because I needed to stop playing that game because it took too much of my life, because doing anything that game takes too long. So now here I am over here where things shouldn't take too long, but in order to do things that don't take too long, I have to do things that take too long, and I don't understand what I'm even doing, why am I logged into this game, and that's where I'm at right now.
You know, one day, Chris, you're gonna get like just a good week where you're like, I like Metroidvanias, and you'll beat 12 of them.
Yeah.
Because the amount of time you put into these MMOs, just by comparison.
You're not wrong. Yeah. I should just go back and play more of Final Fantasy 14, because there's at least things there I haven't done yet.
I wonder if part of the wonder for me and why I got so sucked in was because I wanted to do all of the stuff back in the day, but never got a chance to experience any of it. So it was pretty much new for me.
See, and I actually did the stuff. So it's like, I don't know what I'm going to get out of this other than it's neat to run around with some items that boost your experience rate and stuff. Which I have been had some fun doing, and it's like it is relaxing to just run around and kill things. But then when I have to actually do some of the annoying stuff to progress my character in certain ways, like unlocking the ability to buy Sparks gear, for example, the people running the server have made weird choices and locking certain things behind things that aren't locked that way on the retail server. And it's like, okay, fine.
Yes. Some of that stuff I'm not very happy about, like finding out that one of the best trusts you can get is locked behind doing like guild, some kind of guild group activity that I can't remember. Basically being like the top guild on your on that server for a week.
No, are you thinking of the Unity trusts?
No, this was something different. All Unity trusts aren't that bad.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up and ask you about it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, like, one of the best DPS trusts is Shintoto 2, but she's locked behind some.
Oh, really? Did they lock Shantotto 2 behind that? All right.
Yeah.
Weird.
And I don't understand that decision.
I mean, it's a private server. They make decisions. They're just people. And it's just like, this is not a retail service meant to appeal to everybody and be equitable. This is some dudes running a service in their spare time. And if you don't like their decisions, go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Just they're a bit popular at the moment, or at least they were. I don't know. This service has actually been around for a while. So this, I don't know what this push is lately of everyone talking about it, but like, here we are.
Some Final Fantasy XI videos came out on YouTube that kind of talked private servers and.
Oh, see, I didn't know there were videos. I got to watch these videos.
I can't remember them. I think one of them was like, is Final Fantasy XI relevant in 2025
at
the end of it?
I know the answer to that. No, it was formative, but it's not relevant now. Don't play it. Play something new.
And like I said, my impetus for wanting to try it out was going through the magic cards, and it's like I never got to experience this.
The other thing that I would think is mass nostalgia is cyclical. So It just eventually enough big named people are going to go, I miss Final Fantasy XI. And then it's a thing. It's 4 years from now, suddenly everyone's going to be playing like EverQuest again, which I think actually was a thing recently, wasn't it?
This would, oh gosh, I hope not. Like, okay, maybe I shouldn't say that. But like, oh man, I tried EverQuest last year. I failed out very hard. I failed out once I examined how the controls work. I said, nope, I ain't doing this. I'm not controlling a game like this. And I uninstalled EverQuest. And it's like free to play now. So I was like,
But also, Chris, you say you're having problems on your PC. Why don't you install it on your Steam Deck?
I tried that last night, and I was having trouble getting the installer to run. So, and then I went to their server looking for like the error message, and I saw Hairfrog posting about the same error message. So that's the whole thing too. Me and Hairfrog gotta go complain about the Linux install experience of Cat's Eye XI.
So
you know what they did? You know this dude, like who runs the server. Puts up a video on Steam and seriously tells you, like, the person who controls the launcher and the installer and could make all this better, he gets on there and tells you you need to go and download a 3-year-old version of Proton, and then if you run it, it's going to work fine. And then he walks you through the install with no errors and no info on how to troubleshoot errors that he knows comes up because they've got bots that reply to it on their Discord server, giving people like, yeah, we don't know. Just here's the manual install method. Try that and see if it works for you, which nobody does. They just keep posting their errors and nobody helps them. And then they eventually just leave the server. It's really wild to see their installations, quote unquote, support channel. But yeah, it's like, you know, dude, you are the one controlling the code here. You could make this work on modern systems, but like, also, I don't blame him because this is something he's doing in his spare time. Why would you? Why would you do that? You wouldn't, because this is a pain in the butt. Nobody wants to support this code base. Square Enix doesn't want to support this code base. It's like, oh.
Unironically, this is one of the reasons I love our website, is we could use our collective power and influence to talk about new and interesting games, but no, we're going to do Final Fantasy XI.
Our power and influence. That's laughable.
Hey, there's enough of us on this server that apparently everyone's playing on, so maybe...
There's three, maybe four if you can figure out how to install it.
You know any games out there wish they had four people playing it?
Okay.
I'm just amused that I was the progenitor of this.
Well, I think Scar was.
Oh.
Because he's been in Cat's Eye this whole time, so.
Yeah, he was the OG, mm-hmm. I guess.
I don't know. That's been Final Fantasy XI for me. It's fine. It's nostalgic. Once again, if I, you know, I hooked up with Kelly and Scar one night for like an hour, and that was fun and neat to run around and just like, oh, we're doing a thing in a game together. And that's always been the strength of MMOs, right? And it does, mm-hmm. you know, good MMO, bad MMO, that social element is the special sauce. I don't know. The other thing it does for me is make me wish there were good popular MMOs now that didn't feel old. And like even 14 and WoW, that looks like it's getting that same sort of like, yeah, I've done all this before. And but they're getting new things added at least, which is something. I guess Final Fantasy XI had something new added, but like I'm legitimately scared to install the retail version of that game again because I might actually, you know, play too much, and that would actually be a life problem. So I don't want to go down that road.
So just because it's the last one I can personally think of, which doesn't mean it is the last update recently. Did you ever play New World?
Yes.
The Amazon one there?
I did. Yes. I did for a few hours, and then I never could get anyone else into it, and I also just kept telling myself I'd play more, and I didn't, and I don't have a good excuse there. I don't know what to say about that game. I don't understand my feelings on New World, because it's a new MMO, right? Except, like, it seems to be action, fast-paced, not about exploring and was expanding in the world. That the cycle with New World seemed to be about, you know, fresh start servers and stuff and starting over, and it's like that's not what I'm looking for in an MMO. So I don't know. It just came out at a weird time where I was kind of having this nostalgia for old school MMOs. When I tried it, was at a weird time where I was having this nostalgia for old MMOs, and that wasn't really filling that nostalgia. So I never really hit it. I don't know. So I don't know. The thing that would, of course, make a huge difference is if like a bunch of people wanted to play one. And that's what got me to even install this private server thing. It's like Kelly and Scar were playing it. I'm like, yeah, join me. Join us. It's like, okay, cool. MMO stuff. I just need to recognize that it's that social element that matters, right? And either I need to get on one of these servers and try to make friends, which is like, oh, who wants to make more new friends? It takes so much effort to like be nice to somebody. or I need to just wait until the friends I have are all interested in the same game, which good luck.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird thing. And I'm not saying my feelings are right or anything, because I feel like I'm bringing a lot of baggage to the game and putting it on the game's shoulders that I shouldn't. Okay. So that's Final Fantasy XI. And I hope it was talking about 11 things in a way that I haven't talked about them before. So I apologize if it wasn't different enough, because people listen to me talk about Final Fantasy XI on this podcast for way too long in the past. Okay. The other stuff I've played was more the Uma Musume, because it's a special Gold She Week. So Gold Ship has her themed week. She's one of the horse girls in the game, and she's giving out lots of crystals. So lots of free to play currency to do things in that game. So you just log in every day and do some stuff, and you get lots of carrots, crystal carrots, to do more stuff. So that's nice. And then the other thing I did is last night with some friends that I've played MMOs with in the past, Cyrail, friend of the show, listener of the show. Yeah. So I've played Gatekeeper with them, which is not an RPG. It's more of a roguelike in the vein of Risk of Rain 2 or what else? One of these things where like you and some friends get together and do a multiplayer run, and you go up, and then you can you do like 6 stages, and then you can fight the boss, and then as you find things and unlock things, you get more character classes unlocked and more items unlocked. So it's very much traditional roguelike progression stuff, but it was more of an action-y top-down slightly angled, not isometric, run around shooter MOBA, it's like MOBA plus roguelike, I guess, in a way. But not like slow combat MOBA, but more like action combat MOBA. And yeah, it's fun. That was neat. It was $10, so that's not so bad. We only played for a couple hours, so I think we'll be playing some more of that this week. And that's a neat little multiplayer thing. And, you know, playing that is like, yeah, this is what I should be putting my time into, is like some good social time with people. So let's see if I can do more of that this week. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to play. Oh, I had a discussion topic for y'all. All right. Like, mm-hmm. I almost went hard into a category that I would not have liked, but it made me think about maybe there's a category I would like. So, since we're in the category of like playing old, weird, hacked versions of games that are other people's intellectual property, I have a question for you all. I think I want to play a Pokemon ROM hack. Am I crazy?
No.
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 Okay. Which one should I play?
I honestly have no idea. There's so many of them.
There's different types. So we have Pokemon ROM hacks, which are just people doing fun, unique things with one of the games. So the big one that all my research has pointed to is one called Pokemon Unbound, which came out in 2020 and is like really well done, apparently, and stuff. So there's that style, which is like the unique story, lots of Pokemon in a game, like more generations than should be in the game than should be. And it's kind of like GBA era or something. So it's got a nice retro vibe to it. So like there's that style of game. And then there's the Kaizo ones, which are like really hard, and they ramp up. So like the Kaizo rule sets are like something you could just apply to any of the Pokemon games. There's also the randomizer, which randomizes your Pokemon game. So that you randomize one of the Pokemon games, then you put the Kaizo rule set on top of it. And then people have made versions of these games that incorporate the stuff into the game to help enforce it for you, instead of you having to refer to a rule sheet all the time. So that's a whole thing. So that's scaling the difficulty and randomness of the Pokemon game. And then, what else is there? Then there's others that are just difficult in different ways, just like scale up difficulty. And so there's a whole thing here. And then there's like fake-amon games, which is a Pokemon game, but they've replaced all the Pokemon with fake Pokemon that people have created on their own. So that's the fake-amon direction. And then there's Pokemon fan games, which are just indie RPGs inspired by Pokemon, which I'm trying to distinguish those between actual indie RPGs inspired by Pokemon. What makes it a fan game versus just like this is an indie Pokemon like RPG? Because I don't understand the difference. So there's a whole I need more info in that regard, and I don't understand, because some of the things I was looking at in these fan game videos, I'm like, why isn't this for sale on Steam? What's going on here? So there's too many directions to go, so I'm getting a little overwhelmed, and I just wanted to like do something different that's a Pokemon game that would be fun and interesting. And the more decisions I have to make about it, the more caught up I'm like, do I want it to be like this or like this? And that's going to ruin the whole thing for me. So I'm looking for suggestions. Like, give me like a couple of the top suggestions. Like, here's like just the best ROM hack. If you want to dabble in something a little bit more random-y or roguelike-y, do this. You know, there's a whole other roguelike series of games too. And it's like, I can't decide. So yeah.
Are there YouTube videos that say yes. Which ones are good?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's a whole freaking rat hole on its own to like research which YouTube. And so then I've got it. I watch one and it recommends me another, and then it recommends me another. And it's like, I don't know whose advice to follow. It's like, I'm thinking about it too much. And then there's a site called Poke Community where all these things, not all of them, but most of them are like listed, and there's threads for them all. And it's like, it's like, I don't want to do all this research. I just wanted to know which was like the cool ones. Like, what are the ones people talking about right now? And I guess there isn't just one, because there's so many.
I personally just went basic and played Pokemon Randomizer, and I still have fond memories of my Ghost Rattata.
Ghost Rattata. Okay.
It's a Rattata. That's a ghost type.
So your randomizer. Okay. They can randomize the types too.
Wow. They randomize types, what abilities are learned, when they're learned. I'm sure by this point they have the ability to change what the actual abilities do. So like Cut might be strong in one game but weaker in another, type stuff. Like there's a lot you can do once you're basically unlock full randomization. I've played stuff like that when it comes to like Final Fantasy VI, where they ran, like, I did a 20-floor randomized dungeon Final Fantasy VI run where, you know, Edgar has Gao's abilities instead of his own.
All right, JRPGT in our chat says, Unbound is fun. Also, Super Mario Mon is great if you're okay with fake Pokemon. But then, like, I sit and think about this, and it's like, well, why don't I play, like, the other Pokemon likes that are out there? And then I think the answer is just that most of them aren't good, right?
We literally just did a backtrack on this, by the way.
Oh.
I
should go listen to
it. I very much enjoy
it. Coromon is good. That was the most kind of Pokemon-like Pokemon experience.
See, I think that's what it is. I'm not looking for Pokemon. I'm much like my Final Fantasy XI thing. I'm looking for a familiar experience that's been tampered with in an interesting way. So I think that's why the ROM hack thing is appealing to me.
Monster Crown was really good because it was very Pokemon-like, but had the unique aspect of Pokemon's had different variants. You know, like each one had, their typing was really weird, but you could combine any monster with any other monster and get a sort of unique monster, if that makes any sense.
No, but that's fair.
I enjoyed Nexomon, and I've heard many good things about Cassette Beasts.
Yeah, Nexomon was really good. The Nexomon Extinction, I think, is the better of the two games. Nexomon 1 is a very, you know, just a very grounded experience, but Nexomon Extinction kind of takes a lot of the Pokemon tropes and is very tongue-in-cheek. Your husband played that one.
I know. I watched him, and I have the story for that one spoiled, and I really like what they did there, actually, so that was cool.
But what else? Yeah, Cassette Beasts is okay.
Is there a sequel to Cassette Beasts, or are they still making that or something?
DLC, I think, came out somewhat recently, but no sequel quite yet.
Okay.
Temtem, I thought, was kind of lame.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it was very, we want Pokemon, but we want old Pokemon and not the good things about old Pokemon. I feel like Nexomon or Temtem didn't understand that wasting time was not a... But
it was not Pokemon, a feature?
Yeah, was not a feature that... you know, a lot of the quality of life things that they've put in newer Pokemon games that don't waste your time are kind of there for a reason. If am I making any sense?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
But I appreciate that. But the more you've talked about this, the more I'm solidifying myself on. No, what I want is, I want a hacked version of something. I want something that's been altered. I want to like go through something familiar that's been made different or better in some way. So I don't think I want the Pokemon likes after all. Though some of them do look pretty cool. But then what I want, Kelly, I want to understand why some of these fan games aren't commercially released. That's what I want to understand. I don't get it.
Maybe they don't have the time to devote to them.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Not like putting out a game for purchase is easy. And you know how people are when they give you money for something, they expect it to be perfect.
Yeah.
There might be something where it's too close intellectually or programming wise to what already exists. Once you get money for it, it opens them up to lawsuits and other issues.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't know.
But I have noticed, like, not necessarily the Pokemon-like stuff, some things that I've enjoyed that were free did come out on Steam eventually. Like, for my example, Monster's Den was a game I played on a website called Kongregate for years, and then one day I just saw it was available for $6 or something like that on Steam, so I bought it because it was the same game, they just released it on Steam for some money.
I think a lot of those were inspired by, oh no, Flash is gone, so we need to package it up into download. Let's put it on Steam while we're at it.
Yeah. Well, things like that might happen with some of these fan games. There's also a lot of the RPG Maker games that were free years ago are now getting like updates and repackaging to be released more mass product. Like Off, for example, was a big game for like 2013 and releases next week.
Cool. I think the answer to this is I need to stop thinking so hard about it and just try a few.
Yeah.
Right.
Quick download play.
Yeah. That's what I need to do. I need to stop thinking.
I think for me, the randomizer one is most appealing to me.
Yeah.
I just wonder how deep the randomizer rabbit hole kind of goes.
Have you seen the randomizer program? Have you used it, Kelly? Or did you? No. How did you interact with the randomizer?
You just said it.
You just said it.
Or I don't know what you're talking about.
So the Pokemon randomizer takes a Pokemon ROM and it loads it up, and then it gives you a billion different options of how you want to randomize your game. And then you press those options and it spits out a ROM that's been altered and randomized for you. And then you put it in your emulator and play it. So what are you talking about when you talk about randomizer?
Gym leaders.
Okay.
So that you don't always see the same gym leader.
But like, how are you doing that? Are you using that program, or are you just downloading a pre-randomized ROM from somewhere? Or like, how are you getting the randomized done? Well,
now that I know that there's a program, I'll probably use the program.
Oh. Where were you getting? Oh, I shouldn't ask where you're getting ROMs. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Leave it at that.
Back of trucks.
Like, I was just wondering, like, how the randomizer got done, because some of them they build in the randomization, I think. So, like, that's a thing somewhere. Most people I hear about are doing. You take the ROM, like the ROM hacks are designed for the file to then be put through the randomizer so they don't touch the areas the randomizer. It's like, this is getting real precise science. Here's a problem, though. Here's my rant for Pokemon randomization. The randomizer is written in Java and requires you to put Java on your machine to run it. And I hate Java, and Java shouldn't be installed on anyone's machine in 2025. It is a giant security hole waiting to happen on your machine. Get rid of it. There, I said it, but... That's not going to work if you want to actually randomize.
I can say for Kelly that the randomizer I used, which was definitely a long, like 2016, 2017, probably when I did it, when it created my Ghost Rattata, which I found, like, that was my starter Pokemon, and I found a, you know, electric Blastoise that had a different color scheme to it as a random, like, in the first, like, route one. By virtue of making all those Pokemon different in all the various ways, the gyms were also like, you might be fighting Brock, but he doesn't have a Onix type situation. You might throw out a Kadabra at you, and the Kadabra is actually a fire type.
So yeah, weird.
I'm not a big fan of the typing randomization. I would much rather play like different gym leaders.
Well, and so that's again, that's also possible. Yeah, that's where all this is. Weird, because like, not only can the randomizer do just what you want, like there are games that are like, their hack is mostly just a rebalancing, so like things aren't what you expect, but it's also not completely unfair. So yeah. There's so many aspects of this.
Just mentioning hacks in general for something, I've always wanted to play the Link to the Past Super Metroid.
That thing looks cool, but yeah, that looks like I'd have to practice a lot, and it's like, nah.
Yeah, and considering I know neither game, would be very entertaining.
And then like, people play it paired up, right? And that's a whole other weird thing you can do, where you like, you're sharing your game state over the internet with other people. That's so strange to me, and like, cool.
I want them to do that with more games. Like, give me Chrono Trigger Cross Super Mario RPG. Or you open up a treasure chest and it's like, here's the mallet for Mario. I'm like, why? Awesome.
I think that might take a lot of effort to make one of those, but much might be why you don't see that many of them.
Fair.
Just my thought. Wasn't there something like technically unique about both of those games, which was why that was possible.
Well, I don't know. Okay.
That I didn't know.
That would make sense, but I don't know what it is.
Because I've heard Vaughn play that Let's Play from AGDQ so much. Mm. But I can't remember what the exact secret sauce was that made that so unique.
Some shared game structure under the covers.
Yeah.
Nice.
Both made by Nintendo.
It's well, yes, of course. I don't know if that's all it is. If you're talking about the Super Metroid A Link to the Past thing, it's that the memory banks don't overlap because originally they were going to be one game cartridge. What? They were going to put both on one cartridge?
Probably. It's like a Wild. Greatest hits thing or something.
Yeah. Okay.
That's actually really cool, though.
That is cool. Nice.
I love how we both read that at the same time. I'm like, oh my god, mind blown. Mm. I would die to have that cartridge.
I don't think you need it now. Again, that's like saying you need that record. You don't. You have other options. And you know, also we have options to move on out of this segment of the show, don't we?
Yeah, we have gone on a while.
Yeah. Let's talk about our feedback.
Our feedback.
No, our feedback is the subreddit, but this is our feed. Just being a jerk, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. And it didn't help I had the backtrack sheet up instead of our sheet.
Oh.
Can you tolerate a game where... Oh, wait, no. Is that our new question? Okay. What's a gimmick in a game that makes you cringe? From Gamer Esquire, realize this will be out... updated by the next episode, but in your list of upcoming releases, don't forget the Chained Echoes DLC. We forgot the Chained Echoes DLC.
There was Chained Echoes DLC?
Yep, yeah. Came out a couple days ago.
I think it was free.
Did it make the game know. In such a way that everyone's happy with it now?
I don't think so. I don't know, that game was so divisive.
It is divisive, site. Right? Yeah.
It is not free, and it has 94% on Steam right now.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was getting it confused with the Sea of Stars DLC that was free.
Another game I should play. See, this is what, instead of playing all these weird hacks, I should be playing new retro 16-bit style games.
Or Clair Obscur.
Or Clair Obscur, yeah. You're
or
right.
Get back to Yakuza.
Yeah. Like, you know, you guys just do some letters. I'm going to go think about what I did in the other room.
The Ashes of Elrond DLC is $10. So, and it's on sale for $9 off this week. So there you go. As far as question of the week from Gamer Esquire, he says, Avatar protagonists, they are used far too frequently and serve as a poor replacement for creating a lead character with a well-developed narrative. Fire Emblem is the biggest offender these days. I really hope to get away from Rorschach test protagonists and get back to characters like Marth and the like. Agree to disagree. I think Avatar characters kind of have their place. There, so that you can be more immersed in the story. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I get frustrated, especially with their other subset, the protagonist who has amnesia. So they have a excuse to explain everything to you. It's just when you've seen it, you know, in 8 out of 10 RPGs, it just gets old.
Or you have a character like Adol Christian that is technically an Avatar character, but he never talks, but he's also a character, but yet has suffered from amnesia quite a few times.
Yeah. But see, even when he suffers from amnesia, he's still Adol.
I play Switzerland here and say that if the story is well written, you can have an avatar, you can have a proper lead character. It's just give me a story that's interesting.
Adol is a very interesting case study, but I digress. From Shaman, question of the week for an RPG, any sequence in Xenoblade Chronicles 2 between Tora and Poppy can be set to Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar. I don't get that joke. Does anybody get that joke?
I haven't played the game, and I'm not sure I know the song, so I definitely don't get
I've played the game, but I don't know the song, so you'll have to explain that one to a shaman. Outside of RPGs, I'm just going to say Stage 3 of Danganronpa Ultra Despair Girls and not elaborate further for the sake of not needing the explicit tag. Yeah, some of these references are kind of over my head, shaman. I'm sorry, I haven't heard that song or played Danganronpa 3.
There's a line in the song that says, like, there's too many options. Does that make sense to Xenoblade?
Yeah, because that character is kind of a custom character. So maybe that. From Strawberry Eggs for the question of the week, I'd say it's the motivation slash punishment mechanic from the Criminal Girls games. In these games, the main character is sent to hell to rehabilitate several girls. One of the ways they do this is through some pervy mini-games. It's one Image Epoch series I would rather not play. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any game series that has a pervy mini-game tied to it for any reason, I get kind of cringy about.
Well, what was it that, you know, those were some famous Vita games. Wasn't it basically required on the Vita that you had to have a pervy mini game involving the touchscreen?
Yep.
Or back touchscreen? Yep. Or both?
Yep. And then from Live Yamato, RPG Cast Feedback. Hey, y'all, just wanted to take this time to say how much I appreciate the hard work you put into this podcast. I remember discovering you folks back in the 8th grade. I am turning 30 this year. And while time is indeed a cruel mistress, it's also meant that the podcast has followed me through many phases of life.
Aww.
Thank you for being a constant. Next, I wanted to know what has been the most grind you have ever done for a game. Was there a specific boss or goal that required you to lock in and dump unrecoverable hours of your life? Cheers. Yes, the first time I tried to beat Emerald and Ruby Weapon in Final Fantasy VII. That was a lot of materia grinding.
For me, like, time lost that you never get back, it always comes back to Metal Max.
I thought you were going to say Tales of... Or Trails
Sorry. Metal Max. Got to the end of that. I remember I was playing that for a review. I got to the end of the game in like 20 hours. No big deal. And then I spent like 25, 30 hours grinding, trying to get past the final boss. So that one I remember being particularly egregious. Spent more time just on the final boss than I did on the rest of the game.
So go ahead.
I get to go back into my rocking chair here a bit because it's one that I've mentioned on here a few times, but it's 187 clocked hours in Rogue Trader. The bugs in that meant the amount of hours. So like I had to delete save files because there's a limit. And it was after like 45 of them where I'm like, okay, I won this fight. It didn't crash save. And then it would crash after I'd made that save. So I have to wait the minute and a half for it to load up and then retry again. CRPGs will be fun to play, I swear, someday.
They're not your genre. What can I say? Let's see. What for me, three things come to mind. One is just Final Fantasy XI, since we're talking about it. I've logged so many hours in that game grinding, like, just... the game. Various job leveling is just part of that game, and just so many levels over so many years. So that's like the first one. The second one that comes to mind is Disgaea, but it's kind of cheating because you could have the game play itself, right? In like Disgaea, the most recent ones, but like if you could do some of the older ones, like I was leveling characters up to 9999 because why not? I had to do that once, so those take forever. And then like before that though, like if I go way back, Final Fantasy Tactics, man, like the characters, my first playthrough of that game, which is still the only playthrough I've completed, I was on the PlayStation sitting there just playing over and over trying to max out all the jobs on some of my characters just because. And I wanted that completionist feel, and like I wanted to be like all the levels, and that was a lot of levels.
I had fun doing that though, so that's why I didn't consider that one myself.
But it's still grinding.
That is that's very true. It answers the question. I was thinking of it from the negative, not from the positive.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's addictive grinding, and that's the stuff you really do, because you don't want to put it down.
There's a indie game I play on Steam called Low Magic Age, and all it is basically a third edition D&D combat simulator. And I have a character, my character's a level 18. And this is D&D leveling, so you have to do like hundreds of fights to gain one level. So that's definitely going to count.
Low magic game gauge?
Low magic age.
Age. Oh, look at that. Early access. Oh, that's a thing. It's one of these kind of like RPG Maker-esque things. It's
basically a combat simulator.
Really? Well, yeah, we've got dungeons and stuff.
You go through the dungeons to mostly continue the fighting. There's absolutely no story. You just go in to explore to get loot and kill things.
Which edition is it based on?
When I played, it was third, but I think they might be upgrading it to be more fourth or fifth now.
Probably not fourth. Nobody makes their game based on fourth. We don't talk about fourth edition.
But the game consistently gets updates. There's just not much to it, and I just can't stop playing it every once in a while. It's one of my like comfort games where you just pop it on, run through a dungeon, see what loot I get, and save, turn off.
There you go. It's very neat.
I think certain aspects in WoW have been another one where, you know, during the pet battle system, I'm leveling pets to level different pets to put them through the Celestial tournament, and then wondering what I'm doing.
Back in the day, you'd grind your actual character levels, and then, that's not the case anymore. And well, that's all different. And then your character levels don't mean anything, and they change your character levels on you. It's like back in my day, our character levels were something we grinded for, and they were respected. Now. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is.
You also had to grind for, why can't I remember the word? Affiliation points.
Oh, reputation.
Reputation, yeah. Reputation, there we go.
Hey, those are still in the game, at least.
Oh, really?
They just don't matter.
Okay.
The Metroid Link to the Past mashup game, by the way. Vaughn just sent me a link. The website is samus.link. That's a great URL.
We're done. The internet's done.
Samus.link. We can't top that. Anything .link as a URL is just fantastic. But yeah.
But that one is so many levels of brilliance.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god. Okay. Podcast over.
Is it news time, or we got more? Okay.
News. Starfinder Afterlight has been announced.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is the turn-based RPG set in the Starfinder tabletop universe.
Right, rate that one.
So is Starfinder like in the same vein as Pathfinder, but outer space?
It's their Starjammer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's going to release in early access next year, and they have a Kickstarter campaign coming soon.
There's a URL where you can see creatures out of our URL. There's a YouTube video. There's a trailer. Star.finder would be a great URL. So who's making this? Not Owlcat, huh?
Epic Tellers Entertainment.
Okay.
New studio, it looks like, on Steam. There isn't any other when you click the developer, there's no other games under their link.
So yay for you sci-fi nerds that also like tabletop stuff. You can look forward to this. Nobody seems that excited.
I'm looking at this. This looks interesting. Like I like these styles of games. I like the Pathfinder system, so this could be cool.
Yep, looked very interesting. I got momentarily distracted from the Twitch side of things. We were raided, so.
Hi, Raiders. We're recording
all
a podcast
the Ninja
now.
Raiders. All the Ninja Raiders.
All right, what's this next game where you're a fox girl?
Nizori
This is one of the demos.
Uh-oh. Okay. Tell us
is
about
good
it.
Or bad?
It is not good.
Oh, no!
It is
not good.
Tell us more. So
they can kind of run through every single trope possible that you would expect from a katana-wielding samurai girl in like an ancient Japanese-type household. Like, she wants to practice katana. She's talks way too long about how to make the best tea for her friend. And there's an uneasy alliance between the cat folk and the wolf people, who basically have the same ears and are all female. And the first actual quest you go on is to get approval to go to a hot springs. So it's like they skipped everything and went straight to the hot springs.
Okay, great.
They knew who they're selling this to.
Well, it is a Kickstarter, so this video is trying to get you, and the demo is trying to get you to back their game, so...
Yep.
How much they want? They want $31,000. They got $14,000, and so this is ridiculous because nobody makes a game with $31,000. I don't know what they're even doing. Like, what is this money for?
Pre-order, Chris.
I mean, like, what? It's a pre-order? All right. I guess
it's advertising and it gets you, in pre-order. Yeah.
It's some money. I mean, I'm not saying you can't use some money, especially if you've been like not working a job and just doing this, but like, this is not what you need to put out a full published game, because they're claiming to put this on console, PS5 and Switch. Like, what is this? What is this Kickstarter? My red flags are in the air.
The combat is very was very basic, as you'd expect from an early kick, like support us on Kickstarter. It felt a little bit more MMO than action, just because of like a regular action RPG, just because of how many hits it took for the enemies to go down. It was a relatively difficult game, though. I play these demos for a half hour and I died twice. So there was something to it. It's just there's a lot of games that have this kind of aesthetic and style to it, so I'm not sure that it accomplished standing out in any particular way.
Okie dokie.
Oh, see, the hot springs is like her goal, is to get to the legendary hot springs. So of course she's going to start out going to the non-legendary hot springs. You have to work up to the legendary ones.
Oh, she's still trying to get to the, like, that's the quest. I didn't make it far enough to know if that quest ends, but that's her main goal, is to defeat.
Yeah, that's probably not going to be in the demo.
I don't know if she gets sidetracked along the way or anything, but her goal is to have her entire village be able to relax in a hot springs, because they deserve relaxation after hard work.
All right, great. We deserve a new story.
Dynasty Warriors Origins DLC is in development.
All right.
A quote-unquote major DLC for the Busuu Action RPG. Do they not have like $90 worth of additional DLC already?
I would have assumed so. So this is news to me. So this video is just going through like their 25th anniversary, like all the games in order or something. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So what is the DLC then? We don't know.
It's major.
This
Chris.
Is the story. Is this? Yes. This picture is just the logo with major DLC in development. Like, okay, great, thanks.
And they're going to do a remake of one of the old games. We're not telling you which.
No, you know, I'm done with this. Tell me about the weird cat girl game, Kelly.
Yeah, this is a Mii game. Mm-hmm. Mirage Miracle Quest has been announced. This is inspired by retro hand-painted objects, and you are a...
I'm sorry. Run that by me again.
I misread it. Mirage Miracle Quest is set in the retro-inspired hand-painted continent of Endafi, which draws from Malaysia... Oh. French and Japanese cultures.
Okay,
and
so like this art is all hand painted, because everyone just assumes everything's AI art now, so we have to say we hand painted this.
Yeah.
And you
apology. Just wanted to clarify, looking at it's Malagasy, which is the culture from Madagascar.
Okay, my bad. I misread.
Cool.
And you are playing an exorcist that is setting out to uncover her true power. And the main character is a cat that looks very magical girl.
And dealing with the scary things like creepy men.
Yeah. Is this a first-person dungeon crawler?
I think the combat is first-person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks neat, though. I like the style. It's very colorful in a unique way.
Like, I can't tell if the if it's card-based combat or if the combat just happens to be a card style.
It's very good artwork. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks neat.
The game looks awesome.
Yeah, you should check it out. They've even got these evil trash bags, which look weird. Pizza slices a tongue. All right, tell me how to not lose aggro, Kelly.
Don't lose aggro. Receives a demo.
Oh.
You are does playing that mean, a tank.
Does that mean Dalaran played it?
Uh-huh.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
That answer.
This is not what you play if you want retro of MMO feeling, because in the demo, at least, you only like don't lose aggro. I'm presuming you're only ever going to be the tank. You have a companion with you, though, and in the demo, it's only a healer who stands there saying, where's the aggro? Why aren't you taking it? Like, just constantly trying to tell you you're doing a bad job.
And okay, this is a survivor's game. And
everything just kind of spawns from off screen, so it kind of plays more like a tower defense where you're defending the healer rather than MMO where there's dynamic movement and interesting raid mechanics, which the game does promise, but the demo didn't have that.
So this is a survivor's like with an escort quest in it. That sounds terrible. Yes. No.
Yes.
No. But maybe. I don't know.
We'll have to see. It is also the most powerful consecration since early WoW that I've ever seen, because like you consecrate the ground, everything dies. It's rather entertaining, really.
Well, it looks like a lot of things get converted or something. They turn green, or does green mean they have aggro? Green means they have aggro, yeah, right?
Green means they go after you. Red means they're going after the healer. So you have to move around to make sure that they're not hitting the healer.
Oh, this looks annoying. So much grinding. Okay.
Yeah. And that's all the game is. All
right. I'm moving on.
Like in a Hades or something like that, when you gain a level up, the skill pops onto the screen and you pick one of your three options, continue.
I mean, having the healer yell at you while not standing standing in the fire is the authentic tank experience.
Yeah, but there are games that do that that are funny about it, you know, that you could play instead.
I did appreciate on my last attempt, I died because I didn't get enough heals. I just had no one I could actually yell at, so it made me feel sad at the end.
Yeah, it sounds like you don't get the experience of rage quitting the raid when you're not getting your way.
You don't have them saying, no, wait, please come back. Why are you just standing there? You should be saving me. What? Like, no, that doesn't happen. They just keep saying, where's my heal? Where's the aggro? Yeah.
Bad tank. Flash quit. Well, speaking of quitting, Hoyoverse has announced that they are quitting maintaining the Genshin Impact version on PS4. No more. Just, play it on the every other platform it's on, which is PC, iOS, Android, PS5, and Xbox Series X and S.
I wonder what the amount of people that were playing it, because, you know, they look at it and go like, okay, PS4 only has 50,000 players or something. Like, what was their limit to go, this was where we're going to close it?
I want to know. I think it'd be cool to know.
War Tales is getting new DLC next month.
And there's some screenshots of just people standing around in places. I'm hyped. Mm-hmm. Let's play. What is War Tales? Yeah, all right.
RPG.
Is it a tactical open RPG? World
tactical.
Open world tactical? What does that even mean?
I'm just saying the tag's off Steam, so I haven't played it to explain.
They've had multiple DLCs. Wow. They've been out for a couple of years now. Jeez. Mm-hmm. And they started working out in 2021 and put it in early access. I don't. Okay. Well, that's a thing. That's a game. Someone should tell us how good is it. Probably wishlisted it at some point. That looks like something I'd wishlist. Anyway, more DLC. This one's called The Contract, The Fief. The Fief? No, Contract, colon, The Fief. F-I-E-F. So you are ruling over your own fief, applying laws. Okay, so you're in charge of an area. It's a kingdom building. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
But I bet it's hard and annoying, but I don't know. I'm talking out of my butt.
Maybe they just added some civilization or amassing three kingdoms elements into a
long-standing cool. game. Yeah. Speaking of things being added to game, the adventure RPG, which is text-based, called Songs of Rats, is getting a free update. Three new campaigns, a sandbox mode, 300 unique events, four language support. Support for four languages. That's a lot of... Okay. Optional DLC Tales from the Shadow EPUB ebook. What? Okay. And the Art of the Wreckage PDF art book have extra narrative content. I don't know what that means, but it looks like if you have those... Like
they have DLC.
Okay. Yeah.
Books.
All right. Man. Currently available for Steam, PS4, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and Switch with a 50% discount on Steam. Well, then. And there's a demo. Did you play the demo?
I did.
Oh. Tell us.
So, it was a little off. Well, it was off-putting to see the color scheme they use because it's a monochromatic color scheme, and it's kind of like turquoise bluish green, where when you get attacked by enemies, it turns reddish. But the actual gameplay itself is very survival-like, despite being almost a CRPG with body, mind, spirit counter mattering. Because if you don't have a high enough strength stat, which is basically what body is, you won't be able to like lift a grate to be able to get the loot in an area. But basically, the gameplay is a 3x3 grid, and you have to click on at least 5 spots to survive a day. And when you first start, like, you will lose every fight. So typically you're trying to collect as many med kits or stronger gear as you can. And one of the interesting mechanics to make it difficult as well is, say you get, like, I got an acid launcher that did 7 damage. So I'm like, can just win a fight one hit. When you win a combat, your weapon gets damaged, so now the next time I fight it does 6 instead of 7. So you can't just sit on a good piece of equipment, you have to constantly be scavenging. And I found it fun, but I also like roguelikes that tend to be a bit punishing, and the first thing that I typically found was an attack dog. So of course good cybernetic dog is good boy.
Is this a roguelike? Oh, it is.
Okay. It is, yes. So once you die, everything restarts.
So do you get better over time, or is this just you have to learn how to do the perfect run or manage your stats?
It's at least, like, I could be wrong. 30 minutes isn't a ton of time to dig into that aspect of the mechanics. But as far as I can tell, it is more of a luck-based rather than, you know, when you restart, you still have the same starting gear that you did before. There's no option to purchase anything. And I don't think you keep any of your gold, but even when I had, gold is scrap in this, I found nowhere to use my scrap. I don't know if that means I just didn't make it far enough in where, like, every 4 days you'd make it to a settlement where you can buy stuff. And I only made it to day 3 type situation, but it's very, you left town, let's see how long you survive with nothing. But also turn-based RPG. One of the things is choose your own adventure.
I really like that one of the reviews is like, far too easy and repetitive. A run is completed in less than 30 minutes and each run is the same. Next review, this game is hard as balls and will kill you several times before you manage to get anywhere, such as life in the wreckage. Like, it's like completely opposite reviews. Thanks. Thanks, Steam reviews. Never change.
And one of the aspects of our news coverage for it was, like, they added a bunch of things and balanced it. So maybe it is a bit easier to just have it be a difficult game now. Because one thing about roguelites, if they're unbalanced, is you can win 5 times in a row and then think, what's everyone talking about? And then see their runs and go, oh, you just were surrounded by endgame bosses at the beginning and died.
Yeah, that's always annoying.
All right, well, you got 45 hours to decide if you want to buy the game at half off. All right, next up,
Tactical Spellcrafting RPG, Instruments of Power, set to release on Steam in 2026. This is set in a dark fantasy world overrun by mysterious shadows, and you're a disembodied image who lost her form upon making a huge discovery. You must fight back against the shadows using catalysts, effects, and modifiers to craft your own spells. And all we have is screenshots. Does making your own spells sound interesting?
Depending on how they do it, is there some ways where the crafting, if it's diverse and interesting enough, it actually feels a part of the game, but other times it's just, oh, I really need this one thing to make a fire spell, so I'm going to have to do 8 random combats to get a drop. That would frustrate me.
Yeah. Moving on. Mina the Hollower is also heading to Switch and Switch 2. This is the game that looked inspired by Link's Awakening.
This is from the Shovel Knight devs.
Yep. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The game's going to release on consoles on October 31st, and alongside its previously announced PC version. And there's a demo right now on Switch and Switch 2, with progress being able to transfer to the full game.
And the magic words were spoken. A demo is released, means I did play it on the Switch. It runs really well. I found it personally to play a bit more like a Castlevania than a Link to the Past type game. There's a lot of movement around, though, for like there's platforming that I'm not really great at. And one thing I will say I thought it was really cool, the opening in-game cinematic where you're on a ship is the fastest I've ever seen this art style move, and it still looked fluid. Like, I was very impressed at how quick they could make these sprites go. Like, you get taken down, like, it's the very beginning cutscene, you get taken down by a kraken, and you just walk onto the bridge of the ship, and suddenly everything is, like, gone in less than 3 seconds. And, like, that, normally there's some time taken. Like, I was thinking of the Final Fantasy IV Baron Wings type stuff where they're moving slowly to the edges, then you see them get attacked. Like, no, this was done in like action, quick. But it is connected rooms like Link's Awakening or A Link to the Past or old Zelda games. And your character can burrow underneath. So you use that to help launch you for extra long jumps or lift up to pick up like rocks and stuff to finish little puzzles. So it's very intricate and not overly easy, but again, I'm the type of gamer where I'd probably say the easiest of a platform Metroidvania type game is still a bit difficult. So very accessible, though, I'd say, honestly.
Yeah, I've had my eye on this game for a while, so I need to download the demo and try it. Caves of Quid is coming. Oh, but by the way, these were part of an indie direct that happened Thursday. Caves of Quid is coming to Nintendo Switch. This is the turn-based RPG that was on Steam that has the ASCII art style.
Mm-hmm. This is the one that spent 15 years in development.
There's a number of games that have ASCII art style that we've covered over the years. This one is a colorful ASCII art style, and it isn't only ASCII art, but it's like somebody took art plus NetHack and ran it and like Gauntlet and threw it all into Blender. Oh, it's neat. You should take a look. Caves of Quid, that's spelled Q-U-D.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot of, like, the interface is, like, just a text-based DOS menu. It's great.
It's a true rogue, and it being released on Switch is somewhat interesting just for being one of the few games of that genre to be on a console.
Yeah, see, I bought a game with an ASCII art style on Steam, and I thought it was this one, but it's not. Now I can't remember what it was. But this one looks really cool. Mm-hmm. Neverway Switch version has been announced. This is kind of a... I heard it was billed as kind of a spooky, cozy game. Because the main character's life is falling apart and a nightmare reality is slowly leaking into the main character's world. But there are also characters that you can date. And there's crafting and farming and cooking and all of that fun stuff, but also kind of a spooky aesthetic. And it was originally released on... no, I'm sorry, it hasn't come out yet, but it was announced for PC, Mac, and Linux, but was going to come out on Switch.
Next year.
Next year.
This is a life sim that, because of the psychological horror elements to it, I'm actually really interested in. It's also being co-directed or co-developed by the pixel artist of Celeste.
So looks beautiful.
There's going to be a lot of little movements that I expect in here, too, to make it just seem very interesting and not just you go out to your farm, hit a button, and then nap.
Yeah, no, psychological horror in my cozy game? Yes, please.
I don't know if I believe that's a cozy game, but all right, fair enough. Maybe for some people.
It's not billing itself as a cozy game. It just has that aesthetic because it's easily comparable to a lot of the life farming sim type stuff where it's just cozy.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, the Steel Century Groove demo has been released. Have you played this one?
I did. This was a
what the
very
heck
odd
is game. This?
It's very weird.
It's a rhythm game.
It's Pokemon with that robot dance battles.
Oh, you buried the lead. You should have told me earlier. This is the game I'm looking for, isn't it?
Tell me more.
Like, legitimately, you start off in what's basically Pallet Town, and you get you build your robot from spare parts that you collect around town, and then basically Professor Oak says, pick one of these three and go to a village to bring a parcel. And then when you start walking down the road, you make eye contact with other trainers who then go and do these battles with you. And unlike a normal rhythm game where it tells you have to hit like this button at this time, it just says, like, it loops around on the screen for you while your robot's dancing along, and it's like hit it at the beat 1, 2, 3, 4 type thing. And you have a basic attack that charges up like other special attacks. And the point is to make your bar fill up to full before the enemy team or robot does to win. So, yeah, like, you can't just spam A, 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 A. Like, if you have another ability, it's like A, B, A, A, B, A. So you're constantly managing what ability, like, you'll have some abilities that have to charge up, and if you use it at the wrong time, it just says not ready. So you don't lose anything for it, but you don't gain anything. So you have to keep in mind when that ability is useful to use. And it's a little bit more strategic than I originally thought it would be anyway. And outside of some odd characterizations that I can't quite place, where it just feels like it kind of felt like Hunger Games from the point of view of the bad guys. And it was like, oh, are these supposed to be good, or did I just not see the shoe drop yet kind of thing, where people are like praising the bad guys on TV. And like, are these supposed to be the heroes? They feel like they're just not heroes.
And that'll be unveiled later. It's a Pokemon
exactly.
game. That's
so
how
I think
it always
there's
goes.
Something more behind it. Yeah. Some comedic moments, but yeah, when it comes down to it, it's you collect other robots at some point somehow. I didn't find a tall grass to go in or anything like that to see if there was a robot hiding or anything, but
you can dance to your own MP3s too.
Yeah. And
right, I've wish-listed
I don't know
this.
The
That's
default
amazing.
Music they use, if any of them were licensed tracks, but it was fun enough to groove to.
Very cool.
Sounds fun. What's this for? Oh, just Steam for now.
Steam for now, yeah.
Steam Deck is fully supported, they say. Built from the start for gamepad or mouse and keyboard. Sorry, I found their press kit. So it's like, this started as a full-time development in 2021 as a solo project. Okay, cool.
Thousand Hells, the Underworld Heists has been announced. This is in development for PC and Mac and available to wishlist on Steam. It is a text-based adventure RPG. And I guess the story blends mythology and surrealism. There's not a lot to the story.
It is a text-based adventure.
Kind of need to play
so the it's story a novel.
More for that.
Well, it's got even some RPG in it.
All right, fair enough. Put up by the same publisher as Caves of Quid and Dwarf Fortress on the PC. Interesting.
Glaciered is coming to Switch 2 this winter. This is an underwater Souls-like adventure.
This one I did play a demo for, but I was one of the ones that I, well...
This is a weird game.
For listeners that may not know, we did a coverage of Steam Next Fest, and some of the games were chosen by me for the people to play. This was one of the ones I chose for someone to play, and I'm very glad that I was right in thinking that it would become bigger and more well-known, because this was in the Nintendo Indie Direct, and until that point hadn't really shown up anywhere else. So
this is this game looks strange, Dandar. Like, you play as an evolved bird-like creature in 65 million years in the future, but the bird looks like some sort of demonic horror demake of a bird-human hybrid. Like, what is this?
It's the underwater Souls-like, essentially. So right. The story aspect, I don't know how that part evolves. You play as, like you said, this odd-looking underwater bird.
Oh, right, and it's an underwater bird, because that makes sense. That's why you have no feathers.
The wings have evolved to swim.
Yeah, it's you're like. Evolved from and dinosaurs, also, not humans. So it's
wouldn't
like
that be a penguin?
No, underwater. Not they live above the water. They just feed and hunt underwater.
But their wings have evolved to swim.
Well, shoot, you're right. But these have bony protrusions like claws. And they've got the weird, like, horror character air holes into their chest thing going on, which I'm not cool with. That would only cause drag underwater, so I don't know why they have it. I don't know what's happening.
The staff member we had that played the demo wasn't completely sold on it yet, but the boss fight was very interesting to go against a great white shark. And originally turned them into sashimi. But then on the fourth or fifth attempt, everything started to click into a very interesting.
Can you parry the shark? Guess so. It's a Souls-like, right? So you must be able to. I just want to see this in motion, and we don't have a video. I want to see like somebody parrying the shark and like backstabbing it. Oh, here's a video. Duh. Yeah. Oh, but it doesn't show the combat much. Come on. Look, you're just swimming. You're great. Oh, and you have a fish friend. And then enemies. Is this really a... this is a Souls-like?
There is... I'm just trying to see.
There's a lot of, like, frantic action happening for it to be a Souls-like, but what do I know? I should just play the demo or whatever.
It might just be an action RPG, and I'm saying Souls-like for the record.
No, it's billed as an underwater Souls-like adventure. Yeah, okay. They're going for it. Like... and they've got the art style for it, so I don't know. Just try it out. You can try. Yeah.
There are two different, one of them's billed as a story trailer, so it might not help for the visual, but the Steam page has a second trailer that has at least a little bit of movement and combat on it. Mm.
Glaciered. Like, the story is, like, it's 65 million years in the future, and the surface of the Earth is a giant sheet of ice. Everything has to be underwater, which how does the oxygen get back into the water? I don't know. Whatever. Okay.
The Super Robot Wars Y demo is available.
Oh, Tam must have played this.
Is available on PlayStation 5 and Nintendo Switch and lets you play through the first chapter of the game and is transferable and unlocks bonus.
Brian also played this. This is the first time I've ever played a Super Robot Wars game. I've always had a feeling that it would be something that'd be up my alley. The fact that it immediately just seemed like a mecha version of a Fire Emblem type game, just like, yep, 100%. Theme song was very catchy when it first started over. I miss crossover RPGs, so seeing all these anime franchises with mecha crossover, even in the first like 20 minutes of gameplay, was very cool. The animations can, just like in, I find with Fire Emblem, can get a bit repetitive if you see it over and over and over again. But each ability has a different little cutscene with it. So I thought it was charming the whole way through. For the crazy side of things, within that first half hour, you have a city that you protect that turns into a flying fortress. And what I wrote down as my joke for that was I felt my wallet feel lighter immediately. So everything was very charming. Combat was snappy. It's something I know it's going to be at least a 4 out of 5 type game. Like, it's, if you like tactical games, this is something to keep an eye on for sure.
I need to play a Super Robot Wars at some point. I played the Project Crosszone spinoffs.
Yeah, but Super Robot Wars is like the ultimate crossover property.
Yeah, Crosszone was just interesting because of the different video game characters.
It is something where it's possible Super Robot Wars, you might miss a little bit if you don't know the characters that well. Like, there were some moments where even they're going into a backstory of what led to the situation as it stands currently, and I'm like, wait, I know that name, and I look the character up, and I'm like, oh, that's from Gundam Wing, that person's from Code Geass, that person's from Go Getter Robo. So I don't know how much you really need to know of the characters, but they do a lot of this name drop is the Emperor of Earth type thing, and it's like, okay, if I don't know who that is, I don't know really what they're promoting, what their background. So I don't know if they explain that better as the game goes on, or if there's just some background stuff that might get lost on those that don't know these mecha franchises
that aren't steeped in the last 40 years of mecha.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm by no means steeped. I've watched like a season one here or there of some of this stuff, so I'm like, I think I know that name, and then another one I'll look up, and it gets to the point where some of the character names are like, oh, I don't really know this one. They're like, oh wait, this one's an original. Like, can't really tell which one's from a franchise, which one's not. They just all have interesting and unique names. But I also don't know, from my lack of knowledge, if this is connected to other Super Robot Wars games. Like, is this a sequel to the last one that came out or anything like that? So some of the story might also be connected that way and not just through the anime franchises, because of course, Gundam Wing is separate from Code Geass. They're not a connected universe in the anime, but in here, the characters are interacting.
Don't know. We've got the Atelier Ryza Deluxe Pack releasing in November, or rather the Trilogy Deluxe Pack. It's a bundle that includes all three versions of the game, or of Gus Atelier Ryza series. And it's going to be available on PC, PS4, PS5, and Nintendo Switch and Switch 2. The DX versions of the game are also available separately. There is not a way to upgrade. There is not any upgrade paths from the original games to the DX version.
So what does the DX version give you?
Different things for different games.
Oh.
So the first one just gets new playable characters and some extra events. The second one adds Impel and Lilla as playable characters in a new episode where they meet Ryza and help her explore a new map. And then the third one has, what is it, Clifford, Sari, and Kilo as playable characters and new content, including a side story with Clifford and Sari.
Okay.
Oh. What, and little
games get different quality of life improvements, which seemed bizarre to me.
From what little I've gathered, if I were interested in an Atelier game but haven't played any of them, this is this would be a good pack to get.
Yes.
Okay. As it's been get it used to be one of those, it just seems niche, and I was just glad that it came out and like, oh, that's cool for fans of the game. And then it seemed like Ryza was where it got an upgrade and everything was like, this is a game series you should be playing now.
Well, with Atelier, you can always just wait a year and there's going to be another game.
Accurate. I mean, the one comes out next month.
Of course.
Or October. I don't remember if it's September or October.
I'd also wait for a sale because Atelier games go on sale all the time. And they haven't said what the price of the bundle is, but there is no bundle discount. They charge full price for all the games in the bundle.
Noted.
Calamity Angel Special Delivery delayed to 2026. This was an Idea Factory game about a ragtag group of couriers as they cross terrains and deal with monsters looking to become the best delivery service.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I can't tell if this is one of those, this might be interesting, or this is a Idea Factory Compile Heart game to avoid.
I would say assume the latter with Idea Factory and Compile Heart, but, you know, whatever.
Always safer to assume it's bad Idea Factory.
It's a bad Idea Factory. Yep. That unfair? It's probably unfair.
Have they become the new Kemco in some people's minds?
Only mine, maybe. What's Rogue Labyrinth about?
What's Rogue Labyrinth about? It puts players in the role of Iris, who's an outcast nomad who returns to her home, where she discovers a giant labyrinth.
Like you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one had a demo that came out as well. The story behind, like, the story presentation was very, like, Smash TV almost, like they're on a reality game show. Your character actually fighting one, other than it just being a typical action, you move from room to room of roguelite. The quirk to this one was, like the trailer shows, everything is a weapon, so it just becomes very frantic as things are bouncing around, and none of this damages you, so you've just knock down a tree and make the trees fling throughout the stage, and it just takes out enemies as it goes. So there's no real harm to just knocking down everything. You can use enemies when they're defeated to knock them into walls. Even though you're using a sword, at least in the demo, as your weapon, it kind of just feels like a baseball bat where you're just constantly bonking things into the walls. So it had some charm to it.
I'm going to say this, like, this is giving me vibes of like a playable lit RPG in a way, right? No, maybe. Okay, whatever.
I don't know lit RPGs well enough to respond to that one myself. All right.
But it is an action narrative roguelike, they say, which is, well, that's interesting.
That's a thing.
Demon school is starting in September.
No, I don't want to go back to school.
You should. Well, I've been excited for this for years.
What is this?
This game draws inspiration from Shin Megami Tensei and 1970s Italian horror. And it comes out on September 3rd. And it's about a university freshman who is the last living heir to a long-forgotten family of demon hunters.
Very much looks like a PS1 kind of SMT sort of game, doesn't it?
Yeah,
has the Sega Saturn FMV type or like CG like backgrounds to mix in with the pixel style of the PS1. So it has a very unique look. It has bonding events like you would expect from a Persona type game when you're going to school. There are side quests, of course, as well, and the combat itself is very strategic in a way where you can't over level because everything only does one or two damage, and it's everything moves at once. So you plan out your attack of your player phase, and then the enemy of the enemies play out their phase. So you're constantly strategically figuring out where you want to move your characters because they have three health, you have three health. You have to make sure you stay alive while doing the max damage to them. It actually brings to me anyway a lot of thoughts of the early tactical RPGs where it's similar to like a chess game. You actually have to use your mind, not just your might. And I, this has been on my list as like I, we've had most anticipated of the year. It won my award for it like 2 years, 2022 and 2023. Like I'm very hyped for this.
All right. Get ready for Demon School. Are you going to play Demon School, Kelly? Are you going to play this? Are you interested?
It sounds interesting.
You guys don't have to be polite. You can tell me you're not interested if you are.
No,
Andy, are you going to play Demon School?
SMT.
You say SMT and Italian horror.
Andy says he's going to play it, so now you have to play it, Kelly.
It's not too scary for Andy?
And apparently not too scary for Andy. There are two games this week that Andy's looked at and said, I need to play this, even though it's a horror game. So there's this one, and then, oh shoot, what was the other one? What was the other horror game? What'd you suggest, Josh?
I said Neverway, the Life Sim one.
Was it the Life Sim one, Neverway, or a different one? Probably not Neverway. He's drawing a total blank. Shoot. Oh well. Doesn't matter then. I think it was something in the Indie Direct, but I'm not sure. Was it in the Indie Direct? He doesn't remember.
Hike Northern Lights is releasing this month.
Yeah.
What is this about? This is set in a world devastated by war and witches and follows Hike, a white-haired girl who is following in her witch mother's footsteps on a journey around the world. And yeah, it has a cutesy pixel style. I'm not sure about the gameplay, but it's coming out on September 18th.
It's a bit more top-down action. Has that not quite isometric, not quite top-down viewing angle. And if the presentation looks a little bit more than you'd expect from what typically looks like an indie game is the publisher's Aniplex, one of the bigger companies in Japan that does a lot of anime and stuff. So there's probably some budget thrown at this one too.
And that was all the new releases. Or rather, all the new release dates.
Well, I've got one new release for you. Ooh, if that's what you're looking for right now. Not maybe as much as you might think. It's I've got off. Oh wait, no, it is. It's off. That game, the one that's like pre-Undertale indie game, like you know that game that like is an indie game that everyone likes that who makes weird indie games now that are popular. Like so, it's called Off. OFF. It's a remake. It was Off is a free game. You could just go play. So like this is a remake that like they're selling for money. It comes out August 15th for PC and Switch. So, but there you go.
The guy wandering around with a baseball bat hitting things.
You've seen the art where the guy with where you're the batter, like a baseball batter, that's that game. And I don't know if it's any good. People have been talking it up ever since they announced this remake, though. So maybe we'll find out this week. Or I guess it's already out, so you could also play the old game. I don't know anymore. Someone tell me, is Off good? Write in and tell us. Off, not the bug spray, but the game. Anything else to talk about this week? We got some editorials.
We have Ryan's gonna blank it on the name of it again, but
Madomagari.
Which I already went over in the first part, so I won't elaborate any further on the game.
Score of 3.0 out of 5. Oh. True potential to be a great comedy. Colorful and playful visual soundtrack always matches the playful tone, but the combat is both dull and over quickly, and the playable character is often the weakest link on the team. Oof. But Puyo Puyos. Even the Puyos can't save this game, can they?
You do fight a lot of them.
Then we've got Story of Seasons Grand Bazaar Impression by Michael Lapps. Just an impression. I guess it's not out yet, huh? This is a Grand Bazaar. Is that the fully new one? Or is it a remake?
No, this is one a remake. Of the DS remakes.
DS remake. And it's coming out on Switch 2? Probably Switch 1 as well, or just Switch 2? Yeah, but both Switches. On the Switch A. Switches? Switchies. Switch I. What's the plural of switches? The Nintendo Switch. The plural is just Switch again. No, it's not. nobody cares. All right, so it looks good on the Switches. He likes it more on the Switch 2, which is weird since it's a 3DS game, right? Or a DS game. But I guess the remake is more. So you ring your bell a lot to sell things in this game. So you this is the bell ringing. I want to say Harvest Moon-like, but this is Story of Seasons. So hi.
Kind of gives me vibes, or hopeful vibes, that it might be like Racketeer, Item Shop's Tale. That was probably the closest thing to a game like this that I really liked. So,
oh, this one was a Harvest Moon game. Okay, so
yeah,
back when Marvelous was making them. This is the one where you ring the bell, and if you want to ring the bell and sell, then get ready for Story Seasons Grand Bazaar when it comes out later this month.
Just picturing going later into a place month? I saw in the caption, there's a person that just screams out saying, I'll be buying that.
When is this coming out? Yeah, later this month. Yay! I'll be buying that. That's how I want to sell things. I just want people coming up going, I'll be buying that. Yeah. I'm like, that's my cat.
Line up at 12 people, the 11th person in line just says, I'll be buying that.
I personally prefer, what are you buying?
What are you selling? Oh, that's it, guys. That's a show. I'm out of energy.
So am I.
I gotta go play more Final Fantasy XI now, I guess. Hey, so now that I've told you what's out, now that we've gone over the reviews, now that you've told us about all the demos, right, Dalandar?
Yep.
I gotta ask y'all, what are you gonna play this week? Kelly?
414.
Josh?
I gotta get through Trails into Daybreak too. I gotta get through it, man.
Ryan?
I've taken a look and maybe I'll pick something off my backlog for a week. I haven't decided yet though.
Ooh. What's most likely on your backlog?
I'll probably end up being something demo-y just to make it easy.
Mm.
But visual novels are a very good in between, and I got Steins Gate recently, so finally played through one of those, which led to me thinking I might like visual novels, and then I've enjoyed every one I've played since. So that's high
Steins Gate's lots of fun.
I've seen the anime, so I have very high hopes for the game if I play it, or when I play it, I should say.
All right. And we've talked about my struggles earlier in the show. Can I get myself onto a Pokemon like? Which one should it be? Maybe you can write in and tell me. But our actual question of the week instead is, can you tolerate a game where one thing is terrible?
If the other thing is excellent.
Well, isn't that implied by only one thing being terrible?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I guess if everything else is excellent, just to set it up as good as thing. And then, of course, what we're really looking there is, like, maybe you have an example, but maybe not. Can you tolerate a game where one thing is terrible if everything else is excellent? Write in and tell us on the show thread over on rpgamer.com. Still allow comments on rpgamer.com, though I don't know. Maybe we have to shut down comments with the whole new UK laws, right? I don't know. So we certainly don't want to have people sending us their driver's licenses to verify their age. Ugh. Good. No.
Alternative for them would be just on the Discord.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to do that to go in there and put anything in podcasts.
Oh, I like that. That sounds like a good idea. So go to the podcast channel on Discord. There's an alternative, and then you don't even need an account. Okay, cool. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. I don't know if Hair Frog's internet is back, but if nothing else, Tam will be on, I'm sure, to stream at some point. And anything else to announce stream-wise? Nothing that I'm aware of. So stay tuned. Enjoy the Twitch. Tell us what you think over in Discord. Join the Discord. Talk with us. Try and talk me into joining your Final Fantasy XI private server, maybe. I don't know. yeah. All right. I gotta go eat lunch and, like, find a Pokemon game, I think. So, talk to y'all later. Maybe.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.